Support comes from Empower Missouri, working to fight poverty and secure basic human needs and equal justice for every person in our state through coalition building and advocacy. For more involvement, empowermissouri.org/action.
Michael Butler has had a varied professional career. He's held legislative, administrative, and political elected posts. Until late last year, he was part owner of a bar. Now he wants to be mayor of the city of St. Louis. And Butler says that expansive experience makes him the most qualified to get St. Louis back to basics. The current recorder of deeds joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need to credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me today in studio is
Michael Butler. I'm the recorder of deeds for the city of St. Louis.
He is also a candidate for mayor, and this is your fourth time on the podcast now. But for those who might not be regular listeners, give us a refresher on who Michael Butler is.
So I'm Mike Butler. I served for 6 years in the state legislature as a state representative and as a chairman of the Missouri Democratic Party. I also served for 6 years as the recorder of deeds in the past 6 years, and I'm just excited for the next step of running for mayor and leading our city into its future.
So the recorder of deeds is Jason Rosenbaum's favorite elected position, but what does, at a very practical level, that office do?
I'm an elected administrator, so our office is tasked with handling all of the important documents that you have in the city, like land deeds, birth certificates, death certificates, and all the marriage licenses in our city, and making them available to you when you need them.
Why was now, 2025, the time for you to run for a different office?
Our city needs to focus on going back to the basics, and basic city services has been a challenge for our city over the past few years. You talk about snow plowing and trash pickup and salting our streets and paving our streets, leaf pickup and filling potholes. Our streets are so bad that when Christopher Dunn was released from prison this past year and he was doing an interview on KSDK, he mentioned that he loved St. Louis, but he hated the bumpy roads. After hearing that really motivated me to run for office, and hearing from hundreds of people that they felt the same way.
You are not the only candidate who's making sort of getting back to basics the center of their campaign. Where do you think your skill set is different to, you know, really live that mantra?
I'm not the only candidate today, but I was the first to talk about that 9 months ago. And now it seems that everyone seems to be following my lead. And what makes me a better leader than them is that I have city government experience. I've ran a city government office for the past 6 years successfully. And I've improved online services in that office. I've increased revenue in the office by $700,000 a year. I've increased staff productivity by 25%, all while decreasing the amount of full-time employees we've had in that office. So I want to spread that to the rest of City Hall, and I know I can because I've had the results in the past.
So how are you able to do, literally, it sounds like, more with less?
I believe in quality over quantity. So I believe in paying each employee what they're worth, and given the technology they need to succeed. And when you do that, you can get the best out of employees. There are two things that happen with there. Usually, employees that have a second job because they're not getting paid enough, they'll be able to quit that second job and work full and give you 100% or 110%. So we get more productivity out of folks who are focused on their daytime job that they like. And the second thing, you give them the technology. Most times they've been asking for that technology for the past 2 or 3 years, and some director somewhere, deputy director, told them no, and they're used to doing things the same way they've done that they've always done. And when you dig deep into improving their day-to-day task and removing ones that don't matter or don't belong there and moving them somewhere else, and improving their primary tasks, you find that productivity increases drastically.
How does that work where just not having the sheer number of people is the problem? Like, yes, is a payment, but if you, you know, eliminate those vacancies, you're not going to have enough people to do the job. We don't have enough refuse drivers, for example. Paying those who are there more doesn't address that problem.
So vacancies in our city government has been the biggest excuse of why we can't provide city services. And I want to first say that I haven't had a vacancy in my office in over 4 years because of my belief in quality over quantity. Our office is known as a place that people want to work. We have a wait list of people who want to come work for us in City Hall. I also want to mention that there was a hiring freeze last year. And for some time, we have an excuse about vacancies, but we were freezing hiring for some months in 2024. How that works is that, as I mentioned before, as you pay people quality, you're able to recruit folks who have higher education or higher experience in a position, and they bring the ability to manage tasks a lot better. The other thing, so let's talk about trash collection. Improving equipment isn't the same as improving quality. Our city has found ordered more trash trucks and done better at that, and we have much more, but we don't have drivers to drive them. So now we still have to come back around with our personnel and hire folks and try to do quality. So you can't do one or the other. It works both hand in hand, improving technology and equipment and getting quality folks in at the same time.
You've mentioned basic city services as one of the areas that the current administration has fallen the most short. Is there other areas within the operations of the city where you think this current administration is falling the most short?
Trash pickup comes up a lot for folks. And then what we know is our snow removal after a big snowstorm we had this year. So what's fresh on people's minds is the fact that the city government couldn't react fast enough to a disaster, a snow disaster. And not only that, it seemed that the city government wasn't interested in doing side streets and providing the service that most citizens were asking for. I have committed to assaulting and snow plowing side streets when I'm mayor. And how we can achieve that is setting aside the $600,000 that was cut from the city budget from snow removal by both of my opponents, Kara Spencer and Tashara Jones, were in agreement with that in the city budget, and putting $400,000 into a fund that will go towards paying contractors in the future. So we have these snowstorms once every 5 years. We'll have about $2 million in a fund in the future where we can actually afford to salt and snow plow side streets where in a way that we were told we couldn't afford in the past.
So basically, contract that out. You don't always need the smaller plows. You can find those guys with their skid loaders or their pickup trucks to come and take care of it rather than having to worry about a smaller snow plow, for example.
Absolutely. And I don't always like contracting out, but in this instance where we're doing once every 5 years, absolutely. And we'll already have those contracts on board, and I'll probably already have a deposit for those contractors.
What is a program of the current administration that you would keep?
The Office of Violence Prevention in the mayor's office has had some success, and I would keep that program. I've given the mayor kudos for that in the past publicly. It's the first of its kind, and it has had some success. I would try to change the funding structure. Right now, it's been funded mostly by ARPA funds, and those ARPA funds are going away. So in order to keep that, my challenge would be to bring that on the general revenue, which would be about $5 million a year, which with a $42 million surplus, I don't think we'll have too much trouble doing. But I would continue those community partnerships. I would also like to continue the Office of Violence Prevention in a way where it's a lot of in-house instead of just partnerships that are there. Some of those nonprofit partnerships that may not have gotten this as much success as we wanted, we can hire some full-time employees that we have more direct control over that we can that can do some of that work.
You were, until late last year, the owner of a bar in the Grove. And I'm wondering what becoming a business owner and operator in the city taught you about what needs to be changed in the city.
I learned a lot. And the biggest thing was how difficult it is to maneuver through city government. Think about this, Rachel. I was an elected official in city government, and it still took me 9 months to get my liquor license. And I had to go to three different buildings to jump through all the hoops to get my liquor license. That shouldn't be the case. I believe in 2025, you shouldn't have to go to City Hall to access your city government. All of those health department and liquor license, business license processes should be brought online so that people can access their government from the comfort of their home. And quite frankly, we should have one place that is easy for each business owner or folks to go to when they have to come, if they need to come in person. I've done that in my office already as recorder deeds. We had this a similar thing. Just in our office, you had to go to four different rooms in order to get your birth certificate, then pay for it, and then come back to the room to pick it up. We've changed it into one retail center, and I want to expand that idea to the rest of City Hall by combining some of our offices with partnerships so that people don't have to go all around the downtown just to access one thing.
And I want to make it clear, when you said you were an elected official and it still took you 9 months, it was you knew the process, you knew what you had to do. It wasn't, because I'm an elected official, I think it should have taken less time.
Yes, I think you should have, yes, I knew the process and I didn't use my power to do anything different.
Correct. I just want to make sure that it was you knew the process because you were an elected official, not that there was an assumption you should have gotten faster because you're an elected
official.
Oh, absolutely
like that. Yes.
Just
right.
wanted
that
to is, make sure.
Thank you, Rachel. I agree. I went through the process like anyone else, and it took me just as long as anyone, if not a little bit longer than other folks. And I know a bar right now that's been at it for over a year to get a liquor license. And you just have to tell them to keep at it. It's more work. And sometimes there's not much we can do differently when it comes to that liquor license process.
What were some of the other skills you picked up while being one of the owners of this bar that you will bring to Room 200 if you're elected?
I think the biggest skill that I picked up was learning that the city needs more customers and being a go-getter at improving the marketing to the city's customer base. And so I did, my bar put the city on the map a couple times. We had some national news stories.
It was an all-you-can-drink concept, yes. If I remember correctly,
yes.
Which is going to get an attention.
Yes, but we never had any big news stories about anything negative. We had some very positive stories twice, even with a pop-up bar that we did that was... maybe after a popular show that people know about that was around soccer. And what I learned is that people do want to come to St. Louis. They do want to have reasons to come to our city. They do want to move back to the city of St. Louis. They have to feel comfortable and feel safe and feel excited about coming to our city. And I learned that we can do that if we satisfy what they're saying they need, which is they want better schools, they want better housing options, they want lower crime. And when you satisfy your customer, then you'll get more of them.
Did you ever learn how to pour the drinks at the bar?
Oh, absolutely. I was a part of making the recipes for several of them.
What was your favorite one?
My favorite one was one called the Lou Juice.
Okay.
So the Lou Juice was a college recipe of mine that I...
Some kind of Everclear and Punch-ish.
Oh, never use any low bar.
So a higher end.
It was a middle
college punch.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I definitely grew with it.
I think everyone has had a cup of that at some point. Most people have had a cup of that in their life at some point.
I do want to say, I never worked full-time at that bar. It was always part-time. And I ran a government office at the same time, which one of the reasons I decided to lean in and after I closed the bar was that I'm good at government. Being a part-time bar owner was cool in its time, but this is my passion, and helping people and making life more fair for everyone has always been my path and what I'm best at.
So I wanted to get back to what you said are the needs that people are expressing to you mm-hmm. that they want addressed to move back or get excited about the city. And the first one you said was housing, or one of the ones you said was housing. What would be Mayor Michael Butler's plan to address the housing needs in the city?
I want to eliminate the Del Mar divide in our city, and I want to begin to see material change in reducing the amount of the thousands of properties we have that are vacant housing and turn them into livable spaces again. And how we do that is we got to you can eat an elephant one bite at a time. And I want to focus on an area just north of Central West End, between Jefferson and Skinker, Del Mar to Page. In the first 3 years of me being mayor, I love there to no longer be a Del Mar divide. There needs to be a Page divide. And then we can move up from there. So the best incentives, consumer incentives like down payment assistance, closing cost assistance, and other consumer incentives that are already accessible through city government. We got to make sure we're marketing and enhancing those. And we want to make sure that they're available in those neighborhoods within that zone. outside this zone, we want to use RAND's funding to reduce all of our LRA property that needs to be demolished or can be renovated down to $1. So we're spurring private sector investment north of Page and throughout the entire city. Lastly, that a second area for that is in Southeast City, just south of Gravois, because there's a Gravois divide in South City as well. Between Gravois, Jefferson, and Cherokee Street, we want to do the same thing. We want to get the best incentives and spur what I call a functioning housing market in those areas. Secondly, we want to pay contractors to build new infield housing that people want to buy that's affordable. So single-family homes and some duplexes that people can rent, we want to make sure that we are partnering with contractors to build that housing and make no excuses about why there isn't new places people can live to increase population there. And if we can't find enough contractors to do it fast enough, I want to start a contract of last resort program where the city government will build that housing itself. Once again, what I hear from people every day is they don't want any more excuses why our city looks the way it does, especially when we have over $290 million sitting along to help solve that problem. And I want to use our RAMS funding directly to increase our population by increasing our housing stock.
The other area that you mentioned was public safety. What is Mayor Michael Butler's plan to give people the public safety?
So public safety does include quality over quantity. Again, I believe in building a quality police department by focusing on raises for our police officers and increasing expectations for those officers. I want to make sure we're choosing a foundation of quality officers and able to recruit the best officers in our city. Number two, of course, continuing programs that go after the root causes of crime. So we're attacking a crime from a community standpoint and including community policing in there. Third, we need to enforce our traffic laws again. And many people know that that's an ongoing issue in our city. And lastly, we got to fight against federal government intrusion. So we know that there are conservative legislative priorities that want to bring stop and frisk and deportation laws to our city that we got to make sure that we're fighting against and that are things that are not seeing those values that could harm the great relationship that our police and our community have been trying to build over the past 10 years.
And finally, schools. This would be an area where the mayor doesn't have direct control or oversight. But what would be your plan to help with the St. Louis Public Schools?
My plan to help with the St. Louis Public Schools, to me, sets me apart for the rest of the candidates. Because while I'm not running for superintendent, I do understand schools much better than everyone. So I plan to put RAMS money towards wraparound services around our schools. It's important to know that about 30% of our students in St. Louis Public Schools deal with housing insecurity. The city government can help out with that. About the same amount of students deal with food insecurity. The city government can help out with that. And we know how poverty has a negative effect on student achievement. And I feel it's appropriate for the city government to help with wraparound service to reduce the effect of poverty on a lot of our students, especially in 20 low-income schools where that money will go towards a full-time nurse, a full-time social worker, and a full-time therapist that help our students with their mental and physical health every day, and then connect them to programs in their neighborhood that help to get them the resources they need, them and their family the resources they need.
You're talking about a city that you said can't even do its basic services well right now, taking on a lot of additional responsibility. How do you square that circle, if you will?
How that funding was used in the past was the city created regulations in that community schools funding through our budget, and they set parameters, and that money went to the St. Louis Public Schools. So while the St. Louis Public Schools is trying to better itself at this time, I think it would be very helpful that they have some money to help with the surrounding out-of-school issues that can plague them. So I think while the city government is not as efficient as it could be, with the right leadership, we have to do more than one thing well. We have to do 12 things right at a time or more with our 40 different agencies. We can't make an excuse as why we can't get things done for our citizens.
As you moved some of the Recorder of Deeds services online, what roadblocks did you run into that you think you said you could do it, but might make scaling that up to a full city larger?
So people told me what I wanted to do was impossible. One of the biggest roadblocks that was placed in front of me were folks saying that my idea to bring services online was against the law and that we need to change the law in Jefferson City in order to make that happen. I responded to them like, I'm a lawmaker. We can make that happen. And my relationship with Jefferson City is much better than any of the other candidates. I know I can work with Governor Kehoe and others in Jefferson City. And that's another thing that really sets me apart in this race. What makes me have the ability to accomplish the things that other folks don't is that I have the confidence and I have the ability to inspire confidence in other employees in our city government to make that happen. I'll end by saying that's the last thing I realized being running a successful city government office is that sometimes our directors and our employees, they just need permission to be great. They're used to doing something the same way for the past several years. And if they're given the technology they need, if they're given the direction, the correct direction and the vision that we haven't seen for the past 4 years, then we can make some improvements and we'll see those employees increase their productivity and showcase the city that they can that we can accomplish our goals.
We have talked a lot about basic city services, and obviously top of mind for a lot of people is the January winter storm and the response to that. If you were grading the city's response to this winter storm, what would be your grade?
I think everyone would give it an F, and I absolutely give it an F based on what citizens wanted. Citizens wanted to see their city government react quickly and to be prepared. We weren't prepared in the budget for a storm like this. Second, we weren't prepping the streets a day or so before enough to be successful for the storm that we had. And being told, getting a text message saying there's a big winter storm coming and you don't see the salt trucks out more than one time or at all, that shows a lack of preparation. I think the other thing is that it doesn't seem like the city government wanted to respond to what citizens wanted, which was to plow their street and assault their side street until the noise got too loud and they reacted, and then it was too late.
It is about 1:30 p.m. on the 4th of February right now, and as it stands, it looks like the spending proposal on the Rams money is probably dead in the water. What do you make of that whole thing? And what would have been different, perhaps, if you were mayor?
What I see is an administration that is excited about press conferences and announcing things without having confirmed the work prior before. Just think about the St. Louis Development Corporation's Northside Business Grant Program, where the mayor had already done photo ops and presented big checks to businesses, and they hadn't yet completed the application review process for these same businesses. And then fast forward to the Rams spending money, where a press conference was done, an announcement of a deal.
We have a deal.
And the deal falls apart within a week, and now we have nothing. What I'm hearing from people in this city is that they're tired of the plans and promises, and they're not seeing the results within their neighborhood. And what I make of how it would be different is that in order to have a big legislative priority like spending our RAND's money responsibly, we've got to include all stakeholders and all voices. We've got to make sure that before we announce a finalization of a deal, that we're talking to everyone. I was with an alderman a day after the press conference was done, and he hadn't any announced
the initial agreement
meeting
between what was then Board Bill 153 yes. and 131. So that would have been with the mayor, the board president, Alderwoman Saunier, and Alderwoman Boyd.
Correct. And this alderman at a neighborhood meeting mentioned that he had no idea what was in that bill and had not seen it yet, and said, "Hey, I would love to report to you all at this neighborhood in my ward what is in it, but I can't, because I have no idea." And that's a lack of legislative understanding, a lack of unity and partnership with other stakeholders and other leaders in the city.
You've talked about some of what would be your priorities for spending the Rams money. What are some of the other areas that you would want to see that $290 million, and I think with interest it's up over $300 million now? Where would you want to see those investments?
So once again, my Rams spending priorities are for housing, for supporting our public schools, and then, of course, I do think some money should go towards downtown. But how I would fund money for downtown is to focus on housing and focus on improving and incentives for development for housing. And I don't think we should be focused on everything that the business community wants us. I think, but they are interested in increasing population downtown. I'd be focused on housing downtown. Lastly, of course, we want to make sure that we're supporting police equipment. If there's one thing that our police department is correct on what they need some help with is non-military police equipment. This is equipment that is just they're improving their cars that they drive in every day, the equipment that they wear every day. They have a legitimate ask to help us. And so I think it's going to be about $8 million to get them everything they need. And the rounds money is there for a one-time purchase for this equipment that's desperately needed to improve the morale in our police department.
There was some investment in downtown housing with a lot of the loft to condos conversions. Then the market crashed. Those turned into a lot of rentals. Is housing really what downtown needs?
So this is part of what my business experience has taught me. While we absolutely want the retail vacancy and the graffiti to go away, we have to build a customer base of folks that want to come downtown. And that part of that best base are people that live downtown or live around downtown. And I want to focus on creating housing options and increasing population with all of our rent spending and as mayor. So I think increasing population is a appropriate way for us to lean into downtown and to showcase to private sector folks who want to start businesses that this is a great place where you can make money.
What would be some compromises you would be willing to make on the RAM spending if part of making the political deals is the give and take and making sure that everyone is on the same page before it's publicized?
So everyone agrees about our improving our water infrastructure and some infrastructure in our city. So there's absolutely a place to compromise there on funding for infrastructure. And of course, everyone agrees on reducing vacant housing. So I think it's important for us to start for the places that we agree. And when it comes to water infrastructure and vacant housing, I don't understand why we can't compromise and make that happen for North City and parts of Southeast City as well.
One of the biggest uncertainties for whoever gets into the role is going to be the earnings tax refunds and how much are spent on paying back these refunds for people. City estimated it would take about $26 million for earnings tax they didn't pay during COVID. It turned out to be $40 million. We don't know what 2023 and 2024 are going to be. As you look at that, what do you think happened that the city underestimated this so badly?
I think that this is a serious issue, and I don't want to talk to any more about how I think we're used. I don't talk to any more about how the city could have done better with those. I think people are clear that we got to go back to the basics and not to be pie in the sky in our predictions and with our city government offices. I do want to lean into what the earnings tax dependency has been for the city over the past 10 years. It's grown from 25% something around 20 mid-20s 10 years ago to now mid-30s. And, you know, next 10 years,
it's a third of the general revenue.
We can be up into 40%. So I think that it's important for us to wean ourselves off the earnings tax at some point, understanding that we'll have these expenses over the next several years, and find different ways that we can not raise taxes because we already have high taxes, especially sales taxes in the city of St. Louis, but find other ways we can supplement that income.
I've heard it called new revenue. You go looking to bring in new revenue to the city of St. Louis.
And that's why investing in our tax base is very important, and focusing on increasing population is paramount at this time with our RAM spending money.
Alderwoman Daniela Velazquez introduced what is essentially a conversation starter of a bill to reduce the power of the mayor's office. It's not going anywhere, but she wanted to open a conversation about restructuring that. So do you believe that the mayor should stay the administrative head of the city of St. Louis, or should those day-to-day management duties go to someone else?
Well, I think that Alderwoman Velazquez would really like me as mayor because I have a master's degree in public administration, and several of my colleagues from my master's program are now city managers, and I've ran a city government office. I believe I'm the most qualified to be like a city administrator, and I'm most excited about doing that unsexy stuff and becoming mayor. I don't want to be a ceremonial mayor in no way. I want to dive deep into our city government and use my experience to improve it. And at the same time, I understand the possibilities of having a city administrator. And the more I learn about this idea, the more I'm intrigued. I will say it's a serious solution that deserves serious consideration. I don't know where I'll land on it. I think there are a lot of negative feedback that I've heard from some parts of the community that can easily derail the bill, but it is absolutely a serious solution that should be given serious consideration, and it could possibly improve our city services.
And we'll be right back after this quick break.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with Recorder of Deeds and mayoral candidate Michael Butler. And I want to kind of go to the political side of this now. We've talked some policy. You were a big proponent of Proposition D, which changed the way that elections run in the city. It's nonpartisan, top two in March, go to the April runoff. How do you think this might work out for you in a race where there are two very polarized camps?
I like Prop D, of course, still. And I like Prop D because it allows you to talk about your plan and that policy stuff and not about the personality or the individual in the race. I would not be running for mayor if it wasn't for approval voting in Prop D right now. I wouldn't want to be taken away from any of these women and what they've what they're bringing to the table, but I do think I'm bringing more. And in a normal election, they would have there would be a thoughts about vote splitting, but that's not the case in this race. So I think that Prop D and approval voting does benefit any candidate in the race as long as they have the best plan. For Tashar and CARE voters, they seem to be at odds. And
I don't think there's going to be any joint, endorsement of a second choice this year around.
Not for either one of those.
No.
But there is a possibility that some of those voters may be interested in me as well. And I'm glad to be giving folks an option that is less polarized and maybe more towards their liking. And we believe a majority of St. Louisans believe in what our campaign believes in and matches the desires that I have for our city.
What lessons did you learn when you ran for Recorder of Deeds that you're using in the mayor race now?
I think the number one lesson is that is to attack the policy and not attack the person. And me and former Recorder of Deeds, Sharon Carpenter, have a great relationship because of that now. Just like in this current race, there's some easy negative talking points that people want you to lean in on, but I'm more interested in what people are interested in, which is what are you going to do differently and what are the policies and the plan you have for our city. And that worked for me back in 2018, and I know it'll work here in 2025.
How are you doing on the fundraising end of things? Obviously, some of your opponents have reported hauls north of $200,000 in the latest financial reports, and I'm wondering how you're feeling about your advantages or disadvantages there.
I'm feeling that I don't have enough rich friends. What that means, though, is that I'm going to represent the people of the city of St. Louis. I don't have big developers or anyone else that's funding my campaign. I was asked to run for this office not by anyone with big pockets, but by people who live in our city directly and who want to see some change. So we are raising enough money to get our message out. People are hearing about us and hearing more about my plan for the city. And that's exactly how I've always wanted to run campaigns, exactly the type of elected official I've always wanted to be.
This is a race where the majority of candidates are Black. And I'm wondering, given the racial dynamics of St. Louis, if you think that may end up making a difference in the race at all.
Racial politics has always been a part of St. Louis politics, but I see it being less in this race. I think this time around, people are much more focused on the future of the city. We're at an important crossroads in the city, especially with the rounds money that's available. I think you're going to see people cross over quite a bit during this race in either way.
Are there any of the down-ballot races that you're watching with particular interest and wondering kind of how the dynamics of your race might impact that?
No, not this time. I'm focused solely on what is best for the entire city of St. Louis.
turnout in March 2021 was, I think, like 22% or something like that. And I'm wondering how you get people out to vote and get excited when so many of them are just fed up with politics broadly.
I feel the same. When Kamala Harris was not elected, it hurt me. It hit me to what our industry and what our has become, and what politics means for people, what leadership in this country means for folks. So I share those same values, and as we've been talking to people, I think people are starting to come from a place of despair into a place of hope again, and a place of fight. And with the fight coming to us so quickly after the inauguration of Donald Trump, and after some of the attacks we're already seeing from Jefferson City into our city, I think that we're going to see turnout tinge up a little bit. And I understand that feeling from folks directly, that it's been hard to believe in that leaders can make a change for us. But every election, we know that we have to put our best foot forward and pick the best people that can lead us.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, a service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Recorder of Deeds, mayoral candidate Michael Butler, thanks for coming on Politically Speaking.
Thank you, Rachel. Had a good time.
Until next time, so long.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.